from the Carter Subaru Studios. This is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Wojtyn.
Good morning. Happy Wednesday, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. Hey, coming up at 10:33, Pierce County Executive Bruce Danmeyer will join the show. And yes, I'm asking him, why didn't he ask for a pause when it came to the rollback, when Pierce County rolled back from Phase 3 to Phase 2? But right now, Ursula, we have a guest during our top three things that you need to know.
Number one.
Yes, we do. And as you know, and as we've been reporting, more than 200 officers have now left the Seattle Police Department in the past year, many of them saying they're tired of the anti-cop climate in the city and a lack of support from city leadership. Interim Chief Adrian Diaz calls it a staffing crisis, and he says the department has just over 1,000 deployable officers, which is a record low, at least as long as he's been with the department. And we have invited Chief Diaz to join us, and he's on with us right now. Good morning, Chief.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on here.
Thank you so much for joining us. So tell us about the impact this has had on response times and the ability to fight crime in Seattle.
Yeah, so, you know, when we look at our patrol response, we have seen our priority one calls, the ability for us to respond in a quick manner. We try to be under a 7-minute time frame to serious events such as shootings, robberies that are in progress, and we are starting to exceed, we're exceeding those numbers. And every second counts in many of those events, not only for potentially taking somebody into custody, but also treating a victim that could be suffering from a life threatening injury.
Chief, let me ask this. This is kind of a random question, but right now there's a lot of conversation when it comes to policing, and there's a lot of hateful rhetoric that has been said towards policing and all of that. Let me ask this. What can the public do a better job with when it comes to helping with the relationship between the police and the public? I talk all the time on what policing can do better. I want this opportunity for you guys to tell us what the public can maybe do better.
You know, I think it's a combination of both. You know, we have both have an obligation to come together and build relationships. You know, we have to, you know, bring in the concept of relational policing, that we know that we can't walk in each other's shoes. And I think having community members to be open for conversations and dialogue, to hear from officers, to get their different perspectives. What we find is that an officer, has, you know, throughout their career, you know, put their mental health a little bit on in jeopardy, because they're responding to calls for service that no human being should have to, you know, respond to on a regular basis, from, you know, anything from death to serious incidents of robbery and injuries. And it is something that I think is difficult for officers over the course of their career to try and maintain, a healthy mindset. And so really it's getting those officers' perspectives and just having a dialogue can help build those relationships. It can help build those connections. And we know that it all starts with a conversation. And then, you know, it's also an opportunity for officers to learn about community. To hear about, you know, some of the things that, you know, can create trauma in community, some of those impacts of how policing can impact our community. And so I think it's really a joint effort and not just ownership on one group.
Chief Diaz, as someone who lives in the city of Seattle and has seen things that frankly are frightening to me, including what we've talked about so much, which is what's happening with downtown. The crime stats are going up. Some of the violent crimes are up. And then you're talking about a staffing crisis. Are we safe in this city? And what are you going to do to address what is a mass exodus right now from the police department?
Yeah, you know, from a major city, if you compare us to other cities, which I hate to do, we are a safe city, and you know, and you know, we have a very low level of homicide. One homicide is too much. When you have to talk with a family that's been impacted by violence, that stats do not justify, like, you know, being able to understand that one loss is actually acceptable. Then no losses are acceptable. So we really have to just understand that we have an obligation to ensure that the safety of all of our community. We had 134 shootings this year alone. 2 years ago, we were actually about 102. So we are on a pace that we have not seen in over a decade. While our homicides are staying relatively low, that doesn't mean that we aren't getting people injured by gunfire. And we are responding to those calls. We're making arrests. We've had a very high clearance of our homicide cases. We actually have cleared 9 of the 11 cases this year. So we are making the city safe. But with the staffing crisis, it is difficult to be able to be more preventative and intervene at times, and having that visual deterrent of having officers out there to ensure that we don't have shootings in our community. And that's where I alert the community about the staffing crisis.
So what are we doing as a city, and what are you doing as the chief to get people to join the Seattle Police Department?
Yeah, so we have been doing recruiting efforts. We've ramped up we've kind of revamped our website. We've partnered with the National Testing Network to hire, and it actually allows us to expand our outreach across the country, not only for entry level, but for lateral applicants. We are doing a number of initiatives in wellness to try and maintain and keep our officers here. And we have in the last stats, while we are seeing a record number leaving this year, majority are leaving because of retirement. And we know that that occurs between January and June. We are seeing less people resigning to go to another agency. So I think that's a good win, that we are starting to kind of maybe get over some hurdles that we've been dealing with, and that we are just seeing those retire. We had a big hiring push 30 years ago, so we now have a pool of our personnel that are at that point of retirement, and so I need to ensure that we have people coming into the force that are able to go out and deploy and do the job. Obviously, lateral applicants are the quickest way to deploy, and so we have not gotten a lot of lateral applicants from outside agencies, so we are counting on our entry level to take fold. However, it takes a lot longer for somebody to get hired under the entry level, to train them up, and to deploy them out. It takes about 18 months. So this is where the concern comes in, is that we don't have people coming into the ranks quick enough.
Okay, you're not going to say it because you're in a difficult position, but I'm going to say that many officers have cited a lack of support from city council, city leadership, and feeling like generally they are not supported. And many have said that is the reason that they have quit. But we've got a couple of other questions for you.
Number two.
Seattle Police Department has had the most officers at the Capitol on January 6th of this year. It's now been 5 months since that happened. Why is it taking so long to determine whether they violated policy or the law? And where are you guys at with this entire thing?
So under our obligation, is we sent this over to the Office of Police Accountability. They investigate these cases. They are trying to make sure that they do their due diligence, ensuring that it is is properly investigated, that they go through every aspect of that. And right now, they are still trying to finalize and finish up that investigation. We don't participate in that, so it's not like I tell them, hey, I want this done in 2 months. They have a process that they do. And then it comes to me for final discipline should it require discipline.
What's usually the timetable on something like that? I know you said you didn't give them a time. It's now been 5 months. Is it 6 months? Is it a year?
Typically by contract, there's an investigation that occurs within 180 days. And there can be extensions to that with the parties that have to agree to it, the union and OPA. But typically an investigation takes about 180 days.
Chief Diaz, there is something that you did have a role in, and that was the decision to rescind the invitation by Franklin Graham for this event that was billed as a way to thank police officers. And Franklin Graham was on our colleague Dory Monson's show earlier this week, and this is what he said, and I'm hoping you can respond.
For any police officer that is a member of this LGBT community, they're certainly welcome. And again, we're wanting police officers, regardless of their religion or sexual orientation, the color of their skin, they are welcome to come. And we just want them to know that we support them, and that this is all this is. It's just a chance to get behind our law enforcement when they're discouraged, when they're down. And so I'm sorry that she has taken that position, but we're still going ahead with the dinner. We haven't backed down.
And the she that he's referring to is Seattle City Council member Lorena Gonzalez, who is also running for mayor. And the running narrative is that she basically pressured you to reject this invitation. Can you explain your position on this?
Yeah, so this is just not an event that we've sponsored, that we have thrown support over. You know, there's been no financial support, no no personnel time spent in this event. And we routinely get requests where people say, hey, we want to support officers. And, you know, we do, you know, sometimes people do take food to our precincts and drop off food. But this is just an event that we don't have any support or control over. And so that is one of the reasons why. And plus, we have to make sure that it mirrors our values within our department, our ability to ensure that we are treating all of our community and our officers with equity and dignity. And so being that it's not an event that we've had contact with the organizers and to ensure that those things are being met, it was my obligation to ensure that we rescinded that invitation.
And do you feel that you got a lot of pressure about that? Would you have made the same decision had it been another group? Because I understand from officers who are within your department who texted or emailed me, they said that we get invitations like you said, and if it were a group like a Muslim group or a different group, would you be okay with those invitations being shared, or was it something just particular to Franklin Graham and his position regarding gay marriage?
No, we have to look at all of the invitations. I mean, you could have an invitation from an organization that is just unacceptable to our values. And it doesn't matter if it's race, religion, or, you know, creed, whatever that might be, political nature of it. And we try to stay, you know, completely out of all of those realms, and if that is the case, we wouldn't participate. We wouldn't be involved. The police department as a whole can't support those efforts, and so to me, it's not about whether it's religion or. I just think that we have to make sure that it fits within our own values.
Chief Diaz, you have a very difficult job, and we always appreciate that you are willing to come onto the show. I promise that I would put a link, because I know you're trying to recruit, and you're trying to recruit for very important positions. So we're going to help you with that, and we'll put that link on to our Facebook page so people know the information if anyone wants to join the Seattle Police Department. And again, we thank you for your time.
We thank you. Appreciate it. Take care.
You too. Okay, we have a little bit of time, so we are going to try to go to our third thing that you should need to know. If you didn't hear it last night, Derek Chauvin wants a new trial. And, gee, as you know, a juror now who was involved in the trial, we found out that he took part in last summer's March on Washington, and that move is coming under scrutiny because now Chauvin's attorney has requested a new trial on several grounds, including juror misconduct. So, and you saw that this particular juror was wearing a T-shirt with an image of Martin Luther King Jr. and the phrase, "Get your knee off our necks."
Sure did.
Was on his shirt. And I know that you were worried about this.
I mean, when you say worried, I had sent you a text, and as a matter of fact, I had sent you the headline of it, and I hadn't had a chance to read it yet. And so, yeah, at first I was like, uh-oh, this might be grounds for a new trial. And then a little bit later, I got to read up on it and do some research on it. Talk to my mom. Mom, if you're listening, how you doing? About it this morning. About it.
Hi, Mom.
And you know what, Ursula? The reason why I bring up my mom is because it's my mom who always says, right is right, wrong is wrong. And I don't deviate from that. If I feel something in my heart, I'm going to say it. I don't care side of politics. I've never been that way. I've never been a follower.
So do you think this was wrong for this juror to be on this case?
Yes! Yes! Absolutely!
Because he had a shirt on that said this back in August?
In August, hold on. Not because of what he was wearing, is because of how he answered. He said himself on the questionnaire, "No, I was never at a rally." This is an opportunity right here. So my mom and I were talking about it yesterday, and I said, "Ma, what you think?" She said, "Baby, it's wrong. Like, it is what it is." Now, do I think that it has any him wearing that shirt, or do I think that had anything to do with his influence? I don't have an opinion. I can't have an opinion on whether or not because I don't know him. But I do know that this is prejudicial, number one. And number two, if this was in any other trial, if this was any other trial besides one of the biggest trials in our nation's history, if this was anything else, how would I say? I would say, "Welp, that's a problem." And if anybody can look at this and says, "Oh, there's zero problem with this," then I have to truly question you on that. Ursula, do you see a problem in this?
Well, I think that the question could be made. I think a bigger problem might be ineptitude by the defense. Do you know that they had strikes? They could have taken this guy during voir dire. They could have taken this guy out of the jury pool, but they felt comfortable. They had strikes still available to them.
It's funny you say that. You know what I do believe, and I can't get this proven. I believe that the defense knew this early on. Like, they knew that he was already...
We knew there was going to be an appeal. There's almost always an appeal. So I knew there was going to be an appeal. Is this going to help? I mean, there were 11 other jurors who came to a quick conclusion.
Right.
You know, is there going to be a different outcome? No, but this could end up being just dragging it all out again.
But you hear what I'm saying,
though.
Absolutely. I think the defense team knew before the trial was over about this juror. And by the way, of all the jurors, this is the only one to go out here and do interviews. All right. Coming up next, Pierce County Executive Bruce Dammeyer joins the show. We'll ask him how he feels about the pause with the rollbacks. It's Gian Ursula.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us on the Gian Ursula Show, Wednesday morning edition. So after Governor Inslee announced yesterday that he is pausing any more rollbacks, at least for the next 2 weeks, Pierce County Executive Bruce Dammeyer sent out a tweet expressing his unhappiness and saying that treating different counties differently is not science. And we have invited the executive, to join us now. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Ursula. It's great to be with you this morning.
Thank you so much. So I want to give you a chance to vent to us. Why is it that you are clearly frustrated with the governor's decision?
Well, let's be clear. 3 weeks ago, I didn't think Pierce County should be rolled back, and I don't think Snohomish or King County should be rolled back yesterday. So I think we should be focusing on moving forward and getting beyond the state of emergency and getting back to some semblance of normal for our community. The frustration was primarily that 3 weeks ago, when the numbers showed that we, by his rules, should have rolled back to phase two, and we asked for a pause, we were denied. So you can understand why, when all of a sudden King County and others, their numbers are worse than ours were 3 weeks ago, that why it's frustrating for Pierce County residents to see our community got rolled back, our businesses are suffering under phase two restrictions, and to have King County and Snohomish County and others be given a pass or a pause.
And Bruce, I totally understand the frustration, but as I was arguing with G in the first hour, I looked up the latest case rates anyway for Pierce County, and as of May 2nd, it said 374. There is an eight-day reporting delay, and phase two allows for 200 to 350 cases. So, in fact, you didn't get rolled back this time, even though your cases would suggest that you could be based on those metrics.
Now, thank you, Ursula. The point is the governor's rules wouldn't have rolled us back to phase one. We meet the requirements that he has set forward. So it's a concern with the application of the rules and the changing dynamic of the rules. Again, my focus is moving forward. That's why in Pierce County, we are all about making sure that everybody who possibly wants a vaccine has a chance to do it. I meet every Monday morning now through the middle of June with about 40 business, community, and school leaders, all about finding new and creative ways to get vaccines out to our community, to remove every possible barrier to someone getting a vaccine. The Rainiers, the discussion with the Rainiers on your newscast, mm-hmm. that came out of our Monday morning meeting 2 weeks ago.
Excellent.
Well, you're echoing everything that I've been saying about this. So let me just go ahead and move on. Right now in the news is the veto that is possibly going to happen when it comes to the Pierce County ordinance to pay grocery workers extra money during this pandemic, the hazard pay, if you will. Can you explain two things? One, how this came to a vote in the first place, and two, why it is that you would decide to veto this?
So thank you, G. I appreciate it. So the reason it came to a vote by the council is I think the grocery store workers union has been pushing this for a while across the region. And so that's why the council, I think, was responding to that pressure. At least some members of the council were. It did pass on a narrow majority, a 4-3 majority last night. My concern is, so first of all, I do have the public health concern, right? I want to make sure grocery store workers are safe and that our whole community is safe. So my focus is about finding ways to make sure they are safe doing their job, not taking an action that will drive up the cost of food in Pierce County and in a way that affects some of the most challenged parts of our community.
Well, and that's another, which leads me to the next question. What is the overall opinion of city or county government interfering with the pay when it comes to the private sector and their employees?
So fundamentally, you hit the nail on the head for one of my concerns, G, is this is an overreach and an inappropriate use of government power into intruding into, in many cases, a private sector collective bargaining agreement or into a private sector negotiated arrangement with their employees. If the issue is public safety and public health, then let's help those people get vaccinated. That's the way that we will really help address their concerns about their own health in their work environment.
Bruce, I'm just seeing some breaking news, and this is going to be coming out of Pennsylvania. I heard you say that you're doing everything in Pierce County possible to make it easy to get vaccines. And we have talked about vaccine hesitancy the last couple of days. We went from basically feeling like it was Hunger Games to get a vaccine appointment, and now people are practically begging to get people to come in. And, you know, we're nowhere near herd immunity. Now, in Pennsylvania, apparently they're announcing later that they're going to lift most of their COVID restrictions effective May 31st and the mask mandate once 70% vaccination rate is achieved. I know one of the biggest complaints is that we just don't know from day to day and it keeps changing. Would you be in support of something like that where you say, you know what, we get to 70%, we just open it all up?
So I think the focus on getting people vaccinated is the correct focus. That's the way we're going to move forward on this. So I absolutely agree with that. And that is why we want to do everything we can. You were exactly right when you said we went from restrictions, scarcity, not enough vaccine, not everybody was eligible. We flipped that script totally. So now we want to get to everybody wherever they are and remove any barrier to them being willing to get the vaccination. That's key. One of my concerns with Pennsylvania's 70% mark, while I would love to see our community get to 70%, I don't know at this point what is really accurate or what is really attainable. We're going to do everything we can to drive that number up as high as we can. Part of my frustration in Pierce County is we've got a number of military in our community, Army and Air Force, and we got a number of veterans in our community. Those that have gotten their vaccinations through the Department of Defense or through the Veterans Administration don't show up in our state numbers. So I know that the numbers that are showing by the state for Pierce County are artificially low, because they don't reflect those Department of Defense and veterans vaccinations. So if we're going to have a true goal, it's got to be in a way that we really know accurately who's been vaccinated in our community right now. And frustratingly, in Pierce County, the federal government hasn't shared that information.
Pierce County Executive Bruce Dammeyer, we sure appreciate you joining us on the show today. Thank you.
You bet.
Coming up next in scenarios, Ursula, we had a listener send us in a scenario, and it has all to do with vaccines. This woman has 4 children. We'll be discussing that next. It's G and Ursula. It is the G and Ursula Show. Happy Wednesday to all of you. Wow. I cannot believe that it's almost 11 o'clock, Ursula. It feels like our show has been going on for about 5 minutes. That's how fast this show is going.
And yet we have had 3 newsmakers on the air today.
All right. Agree to disagree happens at 11:06. But right now it is time for scenarios brought to you by Farrah.com.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo.
Good morning, G and Ursula. I have a little bit of a dilemma. Lately, I've been thinking of getting myself vaccinated, as well as our children. We have 4 children, ages 6, 5, 3, and 1, and I am really contemplating getting the 5- and 6-year-old vaccinated, as well as myself, and of course, the 3-year-old once it is deemed safe. My issue is that my husband is against the vaccine. He believes that it will kill me and that it's dangerous. At this point, I'm not really sure what to do. Do I get the vaccine in secret or do I tell him, hey, this is not just about you and me. This is about the safety of everyone else as well as ourselves. We are younger. We are both 27, so we're technically not in that risk class. But the new numbers have shown that younger adults are tending to contract and have severe symptoms and even hospitalization. Just not sure what to do. I wanted to reach out to you guys for a little bit of help and maybe see if anyone else is going through what I'm going through. 98973 is the State Roofing text line. Ursula, you up the bat first.
Well, first things first, the vaccines have not been approved for children younger than the age of 16. I think the 12 to 15 is going to happen pretty soon here with Pfizer. And then the much younger children, her children's age, that hasn't happened. But I think that that's what they're talking about here in the very near future. I would never recommend doing something in secret, certainly not when it involves your children. And so for her, if she feels like she wants to get the vaccine, she absolutely should and should tell her husband, you know, this is my body, this is my decision, and this is what I feel comfortable with, and this is what I want to do. You can do what you want. When it comes to the children, I would suggest that they go to their healthcare provider, talk it through, listen to the pros and the cons. I mean, it is true that generally children aren't going to be affected as much. So, although, like, for example, my 20-year-old is going to get a vaccine coming up in the next week or so, I'm not necessarily rushing if I have young children, right? So I think it's something that you should have an education on, and I think you should go to people like that you trust, for example, your doctor.
Right. Good stuff, Ursula. Hey, Chris Martin, do you want to weigh in on this, sir?
Sure. I think she should sit down with her husband and explain, you know, why everyone should get a vaccine and talk to friends that have done it and maybe their little bit older kids that have done it. And also ask him, well, where's your proof that it's going to people have died from the vaccine? And just have a rational, calm conversation. But as far as herself, she should be able to go, you know, get it right now.
I just wouldn't do it secret.
No, but she should sit and talk with her husband and try to come to a decision of why they should do it for the kids.
Well, I just want to give a reminder that this is the G and Ursula show. And so during scenarios, you know what? We'll let you know if you should quit your job. We'll let you know if you should quit your relationship. We'll let you know all kinds of things. But when it comes to vaccination, oh no, that's above my pay grade. Only thing I'm going to suggest in this is please do not keep a secret from your significant other when it comes to getting the vaccine. That I do not recommend. Everything else? Oh, yeah. Go ahead. What do you got?
Well, the one thing I was going to say that we can do is we can share our own experiences. So what happened to you when you got the vaccine?
Did I tell that on the air yet?
No, you know. Well, you told some of it. You did get COVID, but a much lesser version of it because you'd only had one and then you were exposed.
Right.
But the actual getting the shots themselves, did it hurt? Did you have bad symptoms?
The first one felt like somebody just kind of tapped me in the arm. It was cool. The second one, Lillian and I had gone to Costco and we figured we'd go to Costco early. And I'd gotten a shot maybe 4 hours prior. And so I'm like, oh, I just got a sore arm. I'm pretty good. And we were in the middle of Costco doing our shopping. And all of a sudden, the side effects hit me rough. By the time I made it to my bed, I was shaking. I was out of it. And so the good news is I went to sleep and I slept through it.
And so how long did that last?
Well, I guess it lasted as long as I slept.
You didn't miss a day. I actually took a day off for my second vaccine, and yeah. I probably could have worked it, although I was tired.
Yeah.
But we did it just in case because we heard the second one is a little far. And what that means, as Dr. Rasmussen and other doctors have explained, is that it's working. Your immune system is reacting to it. So it's working. But again, I think the more we inform people, not berate them for their decisions, I think that's what's more helpful.
All right. It's time for Agree to Disagree. That's going to happen at 11:06. And one of those questions are, Should Donald Trump be kept banned for good off of Facebook? That decision has to be within 6 months. We discuss that next. It's G and Ursula.